Representative Vic Gilliam.
Good afternoon, everyone. I want to open the hearing of the Oregon Elder Abuse Prevention.
Representative Gilliam.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Uh-oh.
Boy, I like that second voice.
7 seconds away.
Is this going to continue?
Excuse me, Representative. Folks on the phone, you need to mute yourself so that you are not broadcasting the hearing that you're listening to.
Did you hear that about muting those on the phone?
Talk radio.
turn your television and your radio off.
Thank you,
Paul. Are we okay?
Yeah.
All right. So once again, I will open the hearing on the Oregon Elder Abuse Prevention Work Group. We are open. You all have agendas in front of you. And number one is to discuss changes made since last meeting with House Bill 4151 and the Dash 2 amendments. My co-chair can help me with who would begin that discussion.
So we made some Dash 2 amendments to the other bill that was presented, and I think, Fred, if you'd like to outline some of the changes that are being proposed here.
Okay. Yeah, I can do that. So in the Dash 2, starting on page 1, you know, this comes from a conversation from a kind of a subgroup of the Elder Abuse Work Group that came together to consider some changes that may be more immediate or needed to the abuse definition. And in particular, our conversations focused on the neglect definition and the sexual abuse definition. So on page 1, for example, there is a reference to an act in subsection 1E, an act that constitutes a crime. There is a reference to...
Fred, can I interrupt you just
for please.
2 seconds? It's just a little housekeeping. In addition to opening the hearing, I also need to open a work session on our Dash 2 amendments to 4151. So that's now open as well. And for those on the phone, when you begin to speak, if you just say your name, you don't have to do it every time, but let us know who you are and who you're with so that they'll know.
Okay, great. So this is Fred Steele. Getting back to from Department of Human Services, getting back to the bill and the changes for consideration here today, subsection 1E, it adds a provision in the criminal code that is effectively referring to incest-type relationships. There's a current provision in the sex abuse definition that is broad as to what those possible familial relationships might be. This provision, it already exists in criminal code, narrows it down to blood relatives, essentially, and will help... in particular from DHS and Adult Protective Services standpoint, provide clarification on which types of sex abuse related situations we should be investigating in those circumstances. On page 2, I don't see any changes. Page 3 of the Dash 2 amendment is where we were working on the neglect definition. And the neglect definition was broadened here a few years back. In function and the way it's been functioning for those few years was capturing situations that were broader than what neglect or what might be envisioned in neglect. For example, even in subsection B of this, and it shows the old deleted language or being proposed for deletion, it was capturing incidents that were essentially de facto abuse based on a finding of abuse against another individual. There would be an automatic abuse finding against a facility provider. Was going beyond what neglect can or should be. The proposed language here, again, worked on with the subgroup of individuals from the work group, is a modification of a definition that is being more broadly utilized at the federal level. It is a definition that had already existed in the Older Americans Act for neglect, and in 2010 was adopted in the Elder Justice Act. Creating those consistencies will be helpful and more functional for us here in Oregon, but it also, at least from my perspective, create some clarifications when and if the Elder Justice Act is ever actually funded at the federal level for those, for monies that might be made available to improve and enhance adult protective services, abuse prevention efforts, or in this case, neglect prevention efforts. Going on to page four, again, this is the specific sex abuse definition that falls under abuse, creating, again, some more clarifications in particular around sexual harassment and what that actually constitutes. There was no clarification in statute previously. It was a little abstract. We were capturing sexual harassment cases and investigating those. Substantiating those, but this, through our conversations, again, creating some clarification. Going down to subsection D of the sex abuse definition, focusing on non-consensual sexual contact between employees, paid caregivers. That is actually, and I could go into more detail, but is a recognition, again, in the last few years of a need to better balance independent decision-making of our seniors, 65 and older in particular, that have an ability to consent to sexual contact, sexual relationships. We were capturing those and, in effect, victimizing 65 and older individuals through this definition previously. So focusing on the non-consensual, that will also be offset by what we're already capturing of, the forced non-consensual sexual contact to cases, so that we will still be appropriately capturing any and all sex abuse going forward. So those are, going through the rest of this, I think are more the technical fixes, the Section 12, just to accommodate changes that have not yet gone into effect from last session. Going into Section 13, 14, so on page 9, starting on page 9 of the dash 2s, the intent of this language in Sections 13, 14, and 15, these specifically are dealing with the sex abuse definition, again, going from what we were proposing in the investigation abuse definition. This definition in these sections is specific to what is generally referred to as an enhanced civil penalty for these type of cases that occur in our long-term care facilities, including nursing homes, residential care facilities, adult foster homes. But to create clarification in this language that also adopted in 2009, but did not the way it was adopted through the legislative process as it is, didn't quite meet the intent of the conversations that occurred at that time. This language is to focus the occurrences more on enhanced civil penalties when sex abuse occurs between an actual staff person in a facility and a resident of that facility. So those are hopefully that is a helpful summary of what's being proposed.
Excellent.
Great. Further discussion up here on the dais. Please.
And to introduce myself briefly, because I wasn't here last time, my name is Aaron Knott. I'm with the Department of Justice, and I'm sitting in for Ellen Clem. She's out on maternity leave.
Welcome.
Thank you. And Chair Gilliam, we did have an opportunity to review this. The Department of Justice is concerned about the modification of non-consensual. And a lot of this has to do with the way, ultimately, when you're having to allege that sexual abuse has occurred, proving the presence or absence of consent is very, very hard. The appellate gloss is already very, very challenging. And what I'd like to advance to the group from the perspective of the Department of Justice is that the two subcategories you have here, employee of a facility and paid caregiver, those aren't quite the same thing. A paid caregiver could conceivably be a spouse, a domestic partner, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, whereas the employee of a facility is somebody who is working in a professional capacity, has a fiduciary duty of care to the person for which they're providing health care. And we've seen a number of cases, and they're very difficult to prosecute already, where an employee of some sort of facility is doing things they shouldn't be doing. And for reasons I could go into that are technical, but which involve predominantly the Reed case, it's very hard to make anything stick there. So what I'd advance is that we might want to consider decoupling that, because if you have a paid caregiver with whom you have a voluntary consensual relationship, a romantic relationship, even if it's a non-codified pre-existing romantic relationship, not a domestic partnership even, but a long-term romantic partner, that's fine. But I'd say that's different than somebody who is paid to work in a facility to provide care to multiple people at once, potentially having sexual contact. So I just wanted to advance that.
Would you redirect me to a specific point in the dash twos?
Again? Sure. Yeah. Chair Gilliam, it occurs twice. Page 4, line 19, what is now subsection D, any non-consensual sexual contact between an employee of a facility or paid caregiver and an elderly person served by the facility and or caregiver. And then it comes up again at page 8 at line 15 through 17, and that's the same definition. And if you look at the way the law is structured now, I think it sort of gets at my point. When you on page 4, line 26 or 27, right now there's a carve-out. Sexual abuse does not mean consensual sexual contact between an elderly person and a paid caregiver who is the spouse. Now, that's clearly outdated. I mean, spouse is not broad enough. It should be domestic partner, and I would advance other types of romantic relationships should be included, too.
Well, that's kind of what we did today. Thank you for that input and catch. Is there further discussion on this point or a response at all?
Joe? Sure, Representative. Joe Greenman, I'm General Counsel with the Oregon Healthcare Association, and I would just give congratulations to Mr. Knott for a very astute analysis, because you kind of caught the very issue that we were trying to deal with on those multiple layers. So first of all, the differentiation between a caregiver and an employee. A lot of this work was done at the behest and the request of organized labor entities that represent more of that caregiver side of things, and they're recognizing in their settings where there are some consensual relationships that do occur, and it's essentially a violation of somebody's civil rights to have the state regulation come in and preclude those relationships. And then you go down to subpart B, where you have the exemption, which perhaps 20, 30, 40 years ago would have looked like a large exemption, but now it looks actually like a rather small exemption, where it's limited to only a spouse, and we know that sort of recognized relationships are in an era where they're expanding somewhat. So the insertion of the word non-consensual was an effort really to, without modifying the exemption, to try to capture an opportunity or an ability for that caregiver to be able to engage in sexual contact if it's a consensual situation. I think that your suggestion actually might be another plausible way of going about doing it, which would be decoupling the caregiver and the employee of a facility provider. It would just be a matter of technically, you know, how would you be able to sort of define the parameters of those different types of service providers in the different settings? But I think that it's a well-placed analysis that, you know, may warrant some additional work, maybe with you involved, to see if we can figure out a way to get to the, you know, the nature of your concern.
If I may respond, thank you, Chair Gilliam. I suppose, by my perspective, we already have a spot, I think, that makes that distinction for us, which is sub B at line 26, which refers to paid caregivers but not to the employees of facilities. So I think that was the existing structure when they made the spousal exception. So I would advance, if we just expand spouse to cover domestic partnerships and some species of pre-existing romantic relationship, and that may be the tricky part, I think we'd be 90%.
Yeah, the tricky part, I'm sorry, I'll just interject here one more time. The tricky part is, you know, spouse is defined, that's, you can do that. You know, domestic partner can is also possible, that's in Oregon statute. Where it gets tricky is pre-existing relationship, or how do you define the parameters of what is an appropriate non-legally recognized relationship and what is an inappropriate non-legally recognized relationship. So probably we also would want to have the representative from, you know, Megan Moyer, who's been a participant here, who's with SEIU, to re-enter this discussion to figure out a way to get to the bottom of this.
Just to be clear, your reference a moment ago was to page 4, line 26.
Chair Gilliam, that's correct.
Good. Further comment on this particular point from up here? Seeing none, just as a quick check-in with our very esteemed drafter, Delisa, does this, do you have any comment at this point on this, or would you like to discuss it after? I just want to make sure you had an opportunity.
Well, I'm wondering, wouldn't it,
and then just briefly identify for the record.
I'm Melissa Seidlick from the Office of Legislative Counsel, and I would like to suggest consideration of, on page 4, line 27, just putting a period after a paid caregiver, mm-hmm. instead of trying to enumerate and describe the different kinds of possible relationships.
Line 24?
Line 27 on page 4.
Okay.
So just put a period after a paid caregiver.
Yeah. Melissa, I'm sorry. That is far too easy and elegant of a solution. any comment on that? Just the record show that I asked her to come up to say that, even though I didn't think of it. Very good. Let's try that, and obviously, if you have another comment. Anybody on the phone at this point have a comment on what we're talking about or need further clarification? On this particular point.
Hi, this is Jerry Cohn, and boy, Melissa, it was far too eloquent and simple in terms of where to move that period on line 27.
Thank you. I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody here joining us who had a comment, not only on this particular point, those first, or any other comments? I think Bert, is it Kopp? Is this a good time for you, Bert, to come up and give your comments? Welcome, and please just briefly identify for the record.
Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Bertrand Kopp. I've been in elder abuse ever since my mother was trapped, robbed, and killed in a fraudulent guardianship. I have papers here which I'd like to pass out amongst you, which describe some of the things that have been done. And I'm so glad to see you taking your time to do this. Prevention, in my opinion, is the best way to go, not to wait till somebody has been killed first. I'm all ready to help in any way I can. I haven't studied the bill yet. I'll say that. I just walked in the door. But if you'd like to take these handouts, I have 10 of them here, and I'll be in contact with you later.
Good. We'll make sure those are distributed to our work group, and we appreciate very much you coming. When we get the final amendments, Bert, we'll make sure that you get a copy, and
for each of them. As you can see, I haven't been
titled. Okay. All right, we're going to move on, and if I just want to make sure there are no other comments or discussion on the dash twos. Seeing none, Co-Chair Hoyle, I would entertain a motion to adopt, unless we can't adopt without doing the amendment with the period.
So,
wait a minute.
So we would be adopting the dash two amendments with the intent on the record to change those amendments to put to end that sentence, what, 8 words earlier on line 26, right? So that's what we would do. So with that, I move.
One more clarification. Yeah.
Please,
and, and also, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Knott, also remove the word non-consensual from line 19.
And,
correct?
Chair Gilliam, yeah, that's correct. Yeah. I'd also note that this whole discussion we just happened that just happened about definitions is mirrored on page 8, yeah. So we need to get that in the record too, right. That we're making the same modifications twice.
So let's just stand down for a second. And Shauna, are we? When's our next meeting?
You do not currently have another meeting.
So nothing's scheduled. So obviously next week when we're in session, we'll have an opportunity for that to happen. Mm-hmm.
And Chair Gilliam, you can move to adopt the -2 recommendations, the -2 amendments as your recommendation with further modifications as stated on the record.
Okay.
And whether those be the -3s or the -4s or the -6s, your recommendation is the modified -2s.
So with that, Co-Chair Gilliam, I move House Bill 4151 and the -2 amendments to be adopted with the modifications that were stated on the record as the recommendations of this work group.
I'm so sorry to do this. This is Dale Meyer from the Criminal Defense Lawyer. And I would, if I might, my comment arises from the very last comment of also changing the word on 19, and now all of a sudden I see a conflict. If I might request permission to say that. I'm very sorry.
Go right ahead, Gil.
I'm fully in agreement with the change on line 27, which is to put the period after caregiver. That makes good sense. Then I believe Mr. Knott was saying up on line 18, we should remove the phrase non-consensual. If you were to do that, it would read any sexual contact between a paid caregiver and an elderly person served by the facility or caregiver. So that would be any sexual contact. But 16 would say sexual abuse does not mean consensual contact.
Remind me one more time what page you're on, Gail.
It's 19.
I'm on page 4.
Okay, thank you.
Line 19.
So if you were to, I think the motion is to remove the word non-consensual from line 19. If you were to do that, it would read any sexual contact between a paid caregiver and an elderly person. So that would be any sexual contact between a paid caregiver and an elderly person.
But and then it clarifies under where it says sexual abuse does not mean consensual sexual contact between an elderly person and a paid caregiver.
And I'll also just, this is Joe Greenman again, also just add that the structure of the statute is such that 11A defines what sexual abuse is, and subpart B is the exemption for what is not, what would not be sexual abuse. So in A, it giveth, and in B, it essentially taketh away.
Right. Okay, so I'm not misreading it. I mean, B does carve out what...
Right. Yes, it does.
26.7 would carve out what 19 and 21 says.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you for the question.
I would have been disappointed if you hadn't spoken, Gail. So, back to the rather cumbersome but helpful motion that we are under, which I'm not going to verbatim repeat, except to say that with the three recommendations, considerations that we've discussed and agreed to, we want to go on record as saying with those extra recommendations, we are in agreement that the -2s of 4151 meet the approval of this work group. So what I'm going to do is, we don't need to call a roll, I'll just ask those in favor to say aye.
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 Those opposed? It's unanimous in the work group, and the motion passes.
Okay. So I move that the work group adopt the draft report with any changes noted in the record as the final report to the legislature.
My co-chair moves the final report. Any discussion on the final report and adopting it? Seeing none, hearing none, I'll ask all those in favor to say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion passes. And it looks like I have a reminder here. You see it on your agenda. House Bill 4151 is tentatively scheduled Monday, February 3rd, 3 p.m. in the House Human Services and Housing Committee. And the advisory agenda should be posted today in order for that to happen on Monday. So Bert has left us, but I was going to make sure he knew that that should happen. And we all want to be very careful and very respectful and be very nice to Chair Tomei between now and then. Okay, we're in agreement. Madam Co-Chair, anything else for the good of the order?
I'm always nice to Chair Tomei, so I'll just carry on as usual. And thank you, and thank everybody for coming and for the feedback. I think that this is a better bill that allows us to do more, and, you know, it's just part of our long journey of incremental steps to help protect more people. So thanks for your work on that, and especially thanks to the people that got together last week to really hash out some difficult, complex things. We appreciate that greatly.
So I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 4151 of the Dash 2 amendments. And before I close the whole committee, I just want to again say thank you to everyone who's come today, who was listening on the phone, and for all our input. We reach tough points where we have to go and work things out. And once again, we did it, and I'm grateful. So with that, I will close our work group meeting. And we are adjourned. Thank you. And we are adjourned.